They saw some stuff. What? What? We saw some stuff. We saw some stuff. We saw you steal some stuff. I ain't steal shit. He said he ain't steal shit. They didn't see enough stuff. That's a conversation with my dad. Even when trying to be direct and get the best information possible, it always somehow ended up going down the road that would get me threatened. I cut you with a razor blade. Okay, that's not loving your son. I tell you that. That's not what that is. Say something else, I'll push you off this roof. Oh, well, that can get you arrested. That's exactly what that can do. Oh, both y'all don't want to live no more. Cut your goddamn foot off. Why would you? Then we don't, what, you just bought us sneakers. So what are we doing here? Are we just throwing money away? Gotta love him. Chapter 20. Freaky Tales. That's what I call this chapter. Freaky Tales, and that's spelled with an F. Just in case you didn't know how to spell freaky. Everyone was talking about sex in the gym locker room. I mean, they done it in the car with a girl, at this girl's house when the parents were out, with the one girl doing a movie. I mean, after a while, I couldn't even contain myself. You know, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. You telling me everybody here has done this? I'm the only one who hasn't done it? I was a sophomore, guys. And it was time. I mean, look, it was time to figure out the whole sex thing. I didn't want to be the only virgin in high school. One of my close friends on the basketball team was named Khalil. All right, he was older than me. Great player, by the way. Most importantly, he was popular with the girls. Because I was hanging out with him. You know, other kids thought that I might possibly be cool just because of my association. That's the good thing about hanging out with cool people. The cool rub off. And I began to believe if he was popular with girls, then I could be too. To make that happen, however, I first had to do one thing that every human must do at some point in their lives. Otherwise, they haven't really lived. Except myself. I mean, I'm the only person that really didn't do it. I was short. I wasn't that good looking. I didn't have nice clothes. I didn't have new sneakers. I was a mama's boy. My haircuts were pretty damn bad. Y'all seen it. There was no point in hiding any of this or pretending otherwise. So what I did was I made a decision to be comfortable with it. See, as a little guy, you got a choice to make if you want to be popular. You can be the tough guy and overcompensate for your mini-me self, or you can be the funny guy and accept your size. And add an incentive for choosing the latter is that it's hard for someone to punch you while they're laughing. Understand that. That may be one of the most genius things I've ever figured out. Can't nobody punch you while they're laughing? Try it. Try to giggle right now and swing. Your punch is going to come up short. I promise you it will. That's why I chose to be the funny guy. Having nothing to prove is the most freeing thing in the world. Rather than constantly defending your ego, you can have a sense of humor about your shortcomings. See, I was able to make the choice because of my ability to shoulder shrug things. Because shoulder shrugging is much different than not caring. It's having perspective. Follow me, people. It's looking at a bigger picture instead of being reactive. See, by having that outlook, I was eventually able to understand that if someone was making fun of my height or clothing, they weren't making fun of who I was. Was what they were saying true? Yes, of course. I 100% should have been teased for the shit that I was wearing to school. Okay? Did it make me inadequate as a human being? No. Absolutely not. So did it really matter then? Hell no. And with that realization, I can laugh at myself too. You see how deep it's getting, people? Follow me. Most of the star athletes in school, see, they had no personality. I mean, hanging out with them wasn't a good time because I didn't take myself and I didn't take my life so seriously. Girls started to hang around me more. And that's when I realized the funny guy always wins. This is because no matter where you are or what you're doing, if you're with the fun guy, then you will have a good time too. You could be sitting in the empty room watching television with the fun guy, and it could be one of the best nights of your life. You could go out for a cup of coffee with the fun guy and end up laughing more in an hour than you've laughed all year. Even if you're doing laundry with the fun guy, you're going to have a great time because he knows the secret to life. You want to know what the secret is, people? It's two words. Have fun. You can stop listening to this book right now. As a matter of fact, thank you for listening. Good night. Or you can wait a little to find out how I lost my virginity, because otherwise, a couple weeks from now, There may be a knock on your door, and a man in the suit may be standing there saying, for $1 million, tell me how Kevin lost his virginity. And you know what happened? You will not know the answer. And that will fucking suck. It would be a shame to lose that much money just because you decided not to finish a book. Besides, I lost my virginity twice. I know it's confusing. I'll explain it in a second. Her name was Angie, all right? It was short for Angie. We didn't go to the same school, but she lived in the neighborhood. One day in the backyard of Ms. Davis' house, you know, we got to messing around a little bit. It was cold outside. We were both wearing coats. She told me to lie down. I lied down. I lowered my pants a little so she could sit on me. First of all, message to any young adult. Don't try to fuck in the cold. It's stupid. Any man, it's stupid. Okay? I was half mass. Now, at the time, I didn't know what that was. My dick wasn't... Okay. You got whole dick, half dick, and cold dick. I had cold dick. And all I remember her going, she was like, is it in? Thus she asked me, which is embarrassing. It's fucking embarrassing because I had no idea whether it was in or what it was supposed to feel like. It was cold. I couldn't feel my goddamn fingertips. We wearing all these goddamn clothes. You ever try to fuck with gloves on? It's stupid. It's the stupidest shit that anybody could do. I couldn't feel a goddamn thing. So I told her, I said, I don't know, is it? She said, I think so. I was like, okay. Then it's happening. Bye-bye, virginity. I am getting me some. As a boy, if you don't have these thoughts in your head, then you're stupid. When you first do it, that's all you're thinking about. All you're thinking about are the people in class that you're going to tell about this situation. Oh, yeah. Wait until I see Khalil tomorrow and tell him that I got me some. We sat there for a few minutes without moving. Then she stood up. It was over, just like that. First thing I thought, I was like, sex is stupid. Because this is how I assumed everybody was fucking. Everybody fucks outside with coats on and gloves in the cold. This is stupid. I looked down and thought, I said, well, my dick is kind of wet. And I didn't pee on myself, so something must have happened. I guess I got my dick wet. Khalil, wait till I tell you I got my dick wet. Cause I'm getting me some. I stood up and I asked, I was like, are we friends? Cause I didn't know what to do. This is my first sexual encounter, so I don't know how it works. Do I shake your hand? Do I pat you on the butt like it's a basketball game? What do I do? She looked me in my eyes. She was like, yeah, we friends. Afterwards, I'm going to be honest, I was totally confused. Did we just have sex? Is this what sex is like? I mean, I must have missed something because it really wasn't that great. I saw Angie 2 weeks later, and we did it in the backyard with our coats on again. That's how I knew this relationship was going to work. We fucked twice with the coats on. Love. Has to be. But this time, I was a little more experienced, so I made sure that it went in. Okay, now, I must have felt it 20 times just to confirm the fact that it was in. I even moved around because my friend said that you were supposed to, like, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to move around, and it didn't count if you wasn't moving around. So that's when I developed a stroke game. Talk to me. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Shouts out to all my guys out there with the stroke game. The first time, I couldn't tell whether we did it or not. This time I was certain we did it. So I double lost my virginity. I had to lose it twice just to make sure. Now, not long after that, the word about her being with different guys got out in the neighborhood and people started to say mean stuff about Angie. Now, she always liked me because I never spoke about her or her business and I ain't never say anything hurtful about her. People do a lot of things to make life hard on themselves. But one of the stupidest is guys who desperately want a sex talk about women. Like, that, I just think that's stupid. I was never that guy. Never. Never have, never been. Not long afterward, I discovered that a couple of girls in school actually liked me, which of course always makes more girls like you because it puts you in the category of, guys, it's okay to like. Now, next, I found out that I was one of the guys who girls were passing notes about. Now, let me tell you something about that feeling. When you find a note about you, it can go good or bad, by the way. Nothing worse than finding that bad note. Ew, he ugly. What the fuck? Why would y'all write this? Why is this not a whisper conversation? Why are y'all writing this? You know, that's tough. It took me a while to comprehend it. Even though I wasn't tall or good looking, that woman was still attracted to me. And that little boost of confidence actually made me better looking. You hear that, fellas? Confidence. Confidence is what makes you attractive. I held my head up a little higher, pushed my chest out a little more, became a little less anxious and a little more self-assured. Fortunately, around the same time that all this was happening, my mom made a big change in my life. Because I've been respectful and obedient with the small windows of freedom that she given me, she decided that at the age 16, I didn't need a babysitter no more. Ha ha! That's right. It only took 16 years. Well, I'm fine with that. You know, I'm fine with that. And I know some of you right now are going, 16, babysitter, Jesus Christ. You're right for thinking that. You're absolutely right. That should be your thought. But I'm fine with it. Because I no longer had to go to old Miss Davis's house after school. I could come home on my own. Sometimes I had like 3 hours alone at home. Woo-hoo! By myself? 3 hours? Man. Let me tell you something. That's when I started to invite company over after school. Mm-hmm. You hear that? That's a big step in any young man's life. When you first start to have company, man, that's when you get situated so you can do, you know, so you can make it happen. I'm going to tell you what my move was. Here's my sex move. My move was to sit on the bed with a girl and say, let me give you a massage. You hear that? I'm going to say it just how I said it to them. Let me give you a massage. Woo! Hey, I'm married, ladies. Jesus Christ, y'all. Sitting here listening to this book getting all hot. All y'all, calm down. It's just my story. See, now, if I felt that she wasn't ready yet, before I would give the massage, we'd watch a movie, which I hope not to finish. Don't nobody want to watch a whole movie when they got company. You just want to watch a little bit of it so somebody can get comfortable. I was consistent. It was the same moves every time, you know. If it ain't broke, you don't fix it. However, it wasn't just about the sex. See, I usually liked her, and I hung out with her afterwards, and I kept seeing her. If it ended, it was always because she got tired of me, and I wanted to move on. I was never the type of guy who got angry or upset and broke up with a girl. That wasn't me. This is all a part of the plan. I think, well, let's just see what happens next. Chapter 21, A Heart Family Reunion. Oh, that title almost makes me want to cry. Because it just means so much. I know what you're thinking. Why? Why does it mean so much? Well, you're about to find out. See, while my brother was in the Army in Oklahoma, something went wrong. During the drill, the artillery fire accidentally overshot a target, and it hit the formation of the soldiers. This is a true story. Okay? We go back to the title. I can't make this up, people. 3 people were killed, and 23 were injured. That was the moment when I learned that love is stronger than anger. Family is stronger than stubbornness, because my family came back together. This is when my mom saw the article about it, and for the first time since he left, she picked up the phone and she called my brother. They didn't speak a lot after that, but when my brother called to tell her that she was about to become a grandmother, their relationship fully resumed. My brother had met a single mother in Hawaii and grown close to both her and her daughter. He'd become a father of sorts to the daughter, and he'd gotten her mother pregnant, and he was about to marry her. He flew us out for the birth of his daughter, and it had been just me and my mom for so long that the two of us, it was almost like the two of us was against the world. And now, here we were, like, you know, the 5 of us, including my brother's new wife and stepdaughter, were celebrating the arrival of a 6. After hanging out with my brother as he showed me around Oahu and he took me to basketball games, plus becoming an uncle all of a sudden, I mean, it felt like my small world had expanded a little. Eventually, my brother moved back to Philly with his wife, daughter, and stepdaughter. He had left the juvenile delinquent, and he returned a responsible man. The military and fatherhood had changed my brother. I'm going to say that on record. The military changed them. You know, everybody thinks the military is bullshit. But there's a high level of responsibility that comes with it. And I saw that. I saw that in the man that my brother had become. He got an apartment. He found work. He was cutting hair. A barber. He started saving to open his own shop. In the meantime, he found our dad. He started working to build a relationship with him. Holy shit. Who is this guy? That's what I'm thinking. Who the fuck is this? Because I know the man that left. This guy that came back was just completely different. Now, understand, he'd known our father in the good days. Before the drugs. Before the bullshit. Cocaine, crack, heroin. Whatever the fuck my dad was on. It's a combination. Let's just call it a bucket of fuck shit. Now, when my dad was buying presents with money that he legitimately worked for, to him, my brother I'm talking about, dad was Superman. Dad, honestly, was Superman until he found his kryptonite. See, my brother saved enough money, he rented the storefront and started setting up his barbershop. At this time, my dad needed money. He'd been a carpenter and an electrician before. I'm not sure if I told you guys that earlier. Because you guys don't really know what my dad did. You just know that he was a handyman, you know. You know he got hit in the head with an axe. You know he got jumped. You know that he let me drive a boat. And you know that he told my mom that he wasted 2 nuts on her. But you didn't know what my dad did. My dad was a carpenter and electrician. So my brother decided, he said, I'm a hired dad. He hired my dad to do the electrical work, and he wanted my dad to remove one of the walls. I dropped by on the weekends when this was happening to see my brother and my dad working together. You know, my brother was grateful for all the help the dad was providing, but more importantly, he was excited to be close to him again. See, that family was coming back together. My dad looked ragged and weak, but the work seemed to be making him an honest man. As a bonus for me, once my brother started serving customers, see, I wouldn't have to get haircuts from my mom anymore. This is a win-win for me. No more bold goddamn heads. I'm about to be a dime. For all of my Caucasian readers, a dime means fine. Good looking. 10 cents. It's a dime. It's a high level of attractive. I hope I'm not fucking confusing y'all. Forget it. Take the dime away. I want to take it away. Forget I said it. Cause I think I'm confusing y'all and I don't want you thinking 10 cents. Cause then you're going to start thinking, well, why wouldn't you be 25 cents or a 50 cent piece or a dollar bill or a $2 bill, $5 bill? Well, why wouldn't you just be the 20 or 100? And then I'm going to go fuck you cause I've never thought about it. So let's just, I was a $100 bill. Fuck. I don't want to take it. Forget the metaphor. Guys, can we delete this part out of the book? Is there a way to get this out? I just went on a bad run and I'm not sure where it took me. I'm going back to reading. I remember 3 days before my brother's barbershop was set to open, I stopped by, okay? And it looked like I'd gone back in time by a month. The place was empty. Fucking empty. Holy shit. What's going on? Reason why I asked what's going on is because my brother, he pacing back and forth. He's out of his mind, hysterical. Never seen my brother like this. My brother looked at me, he said, you know what? Dad had to fucking do this, man. He's fuming. He keeps saying he had to. It was fucking Dad. And I'm trying to calm him down. I'm like, what are you talking about? Do what? As I looked around, it dawned on me. My brother didn't have to say anything else, man. People, my dad had stolen everything. Everything. From the smallest set of clippers to the biggest floor hair dryers, everything. Now, I'm a firm believer that anything can be funny if you look for it. That's my job. I'm a comedian. I observe. Here's what was funny about this to me. How the fuck did my dad get the hair dryers out? They were in the floor. Okay? I'm talking about the hair dryers that's got like the bubble at the top of them that are connected. Like you gotta, there's an arm on them and the arm allows the hair dryer to go forward and backward. There was four of them. Who helped my dad? How you put all these hair dryers in the car? This might have been one of the smartest but dumbest robberies I've ever seen in my life. My brother wasn't in that type of realm. He wasn't in that space. You know, he's fucking pissed. He's pissed because my dad hadn't shown up to work. He's not answering the phone. My dad basically disappeared. All right. My brother goes, I know where to find him. This is where the story gets good, people. There was an area known as, it's like the Badlands or Zombie Land. This is where all the junkies and crackheads go. This is where they go. They get their fucking drugs. They get high. So we ran around the corner to get in my brother's car. It was a Pontiac. I just don't want anybody thinking that we had nice cars, because we didn't. It was a Pontiac. I'm not saying that Pontiacs are bad cars. I'm saying that the Pontiac that my brother had was a piece of shit. You know, it's 2017. I haven't seen a Pontiac in a long fucking time, now that I think about it. What happened to Pontiacs? That's a good question. It's a legitimate question. I haven't seen a Pontiac in a month of Sundays. I'm going to go Google Pontiac and see what the newest Pontiac is. Because I just haven't seen anybody driving a Pontiac. Okay, either way, my brother called it the Ack. The reason why is because he wanted everyone to think it was an Acura. However, the Ack was gone. Now, it wasn't gone because he parked it and it got towed. It wasn't gone because, he misplaced it. My dad stole the car too, people. Holy shit. This was the ultimate level of disrespect. We start walking around, man. We ask some employees hanging around the shop to give us a ride to the Badlands, aka Zombie Land. We got the same reaction from everyone. I ain't going no fucking way with y'all. I'm not going down there. Go look for crazy ass Spoon. Everybody knew our dad was crazy. Everybody. Finally, a friend of my brother's named Phil agreed to drive us down. Phil was cool. Phil was like one of my brother's best friends, man. I love Phil. Not the smartest guy. I can say that on record. Phil is dumb. But he's a fucking great guy. We get into Phil's car. We sped to 2nd Street. The whole time my brother was freaking out. He's pissed. One minute, he'd be convincing himself that it wasn't dad. Maybe we're wrong, jumping to conclusions. The next minute, he's like, fuck that. I gave him a chance. I gave him a job. He's just gonna steal everything from me. How could he do this shit to me? You know, I'm looking because I'm confused. I asked my brother, I'm like, yo, what you gonna do when you find him? I was worried about both of them. He said it's just about getting confirmation that it was really him and finding the stuff and getting my shit back. We drove around the area until my brother spotted the Ack. Holy shit, people. It was parked on a side street. Two people in the back seat. I'll never forget the pain that shot through my brother's face at that moment, man. I'm going to change the tone in my voice so y'all can feel the pain, so you guys can see the little boy that at one point in life looked up to his dad had died at that moment. My brother got out the car. He walked up to the Ack. My dad was in the back seat with a woman, man. High as shit. My brother was crushed. No, let me go with a better word than crush, because it's a deep moment. He was decimated. Ooh. Decimated. That's what he was. He goes, what the hell? Fucking knocking on the goddamn window. My dad opened the door. He told the woman, this is a deep moment right here. This is where it really gets deep. He looked at this woman, and he goes, you stay right here, bitch. Just like that. Now, we wondered at this point if my dad was going to beg for forgiveness or, like, just deny everything. He did neither. It's about time you showed the fuck up. That's what my dad said. He was angry at my brother. See, this time, it was my brother's turn to say, what? I told y'all. In this book, you're going to say what? What? Huh? Remember the words I told you you're going to use throughout this book? Well, this is my brother's time to go, what? This raggedy-ass car of yours done ran out of gas. My dad jumped out the car, slammed the keys down, and just walked away. My brother go, where are my stuff at? I ain't got your goddamn stuff. Then he just kept going. Here's a fucked up thing. When he said, I ain't got your goddamn stuff, he didn't even turn around. He said it on his walk. Your stuff is gone. Boy, my brother was pissed. He was hurt, angry, ashamed. But he wasn't crazy. So he didn't even go after Dad. He told me later, he said, he's the same motherfucker who sicked a dog on me over a basketball game. I had no doubt in my mind that my dad would have stabbed me over this situation. My brother knew my dad was crazy enough to stab him. I knew my brother was crazy if he had chased after my dad and he would have got stabbed. I wouldn't have helped. I tell you that. I wouldn't have helped my brother. My dad's a fucking nut. He's a fucking nut. You know how I knew my dad was a nut? My dad asked to see my dick one time for no reason at all. He's eating breakfast. He's like, you happy with your dick? Let me see it. What the fuck, Dad? What is that? What? Huh? Pull your dick out. Mom? I just called my mom. He said, boy, stop being a bitch. Don't tell your mother. Don't say nothing about that. And we just had to act like it never happened. True story. Random. But you can't make this shit up. Now, me and my brother sat in the car afterwards. We was in shock. My brother saw somebody running across the street with a blow dryer from the shop. I mean, goddamn. It's just in his face. He had a hard time accepting what happened to him. Like my mom, my brother had learned to hold grudges. And it was years, years before he was willing to let go of that anger and speak to my dad again. That was understandable. See, it was one thing for my dad to allegedly steal from my mom, who was struggling to make ends meet and take care of her youngest son. But this wasn't just money that he took from his son. This was his son's dream. See, that's the power of addiction. It is stronger than family, honor, and morality. Dad disappeared after that, and my brother managed to get back on his feet despite the betrayal. He called in every favor that he possibly could, man. You know, whatever he was owed, he needed it. He got employees to agree to defer pay. He borrowed money. He got his barbershop open a couple weeks later. Meanwhile, at this point, I'm a senior in high school, and I thought that I was outgrowing the need for parenting, you know? I felt like I was getting strong and confident enough to carry the world on my shoulders. Unfortunately, the world turned out to be a little heavier than I thought. Chapter 22, Inside the Mind of a Super Genius. A-B-A-C-A-D-A. That's called abacadabra. Let me explain what that is. That was my plan because everyone knows that repeating this pattern of answers will hack any multiple choice test. This test just so happened to be the SAT. Abacadabra. It's genius if you think about it. Because abacadabra means magic. So, A-B-A-C-A-D-A. That's what you write. You go in that order, and any multiple choice test that you didn't prepare for, magically you will pass. Or not. It could go either way. It's not guaranteed. I'll explain, okay? Yes, this was a pretty important test. Everybody knows the SAT is supposed to determine your future. So I didn't want to take any chances. That's why I didn't study. I was going to ace this test. I was going to ace this test with cleverness. Stay one step ahead. Take the shortcut to success. Hard work was for basketball. Everybody knows that. It's not for academics. Less was best. Write that down, people. Less was best. That's a Kevin Hart quote. Patent that. Besides, I had more important things to do. The SAT was happening at 11 in the morning. My friends from the swim team were going to Six Flags Amusement Park at noon. It was a 3-hour test. Fuck, I'm gonna take a test for 3 hours. So I had to somehow finish it in less than an hour. If I wanted to ride the Batman roller coaster, this had to be done. I wasn't concerned with college anyway. Turning 18, graduating, and being free, those were the things that I was concerned with. I mean, I could have gone to UPenn on a scholarship. My mom was now a computer analyst with her own office there. She had a maid. But I told my mom, I'm not interested. I ain't going there. I'll be 18. I can do what I want. Like you said. You said that. Remember you said that, Mom? If y'all don't remember, go back in the book. Remember I told y'all my mom said, when you're 18, you can do what you want. And I said, you mean that? I'm gonna hold you to that shit. Because I remember that. It's an Ivy League school. That's all she kept saying. It's an Ivy League school. You can go there. You can get hired at any job you want afterwards. Yeah, I get it. I know exactly what it is. Keep in mind, I didn't. I had no idea what an Ivy League school meant. But I had to play it cool. You don't think I know what an Ivy League school is? I know what it is. I don't even know if college is for me, Mom. That's what all dumb kids say, by the way. College ain't for me. That's cold word. I'm tired of failing these fucking tests. And I'm tired of reading out loud, not knowing how to pronounce these words. Fuck these smart kids. That's what that is. Last thing I wanted was 4 more years of being under my mom's supervision at home and at school, man. That's what my mom said. So what you gonna do, Kev? Something else. All right. Something else like what? I'll figure it out once I get my place and stuff. I didn't have the heart to say it, but in that very conversation, I had fulfilled my childhood dream. To be able to finally tell my mom I'm grown. Those words were the sum total of my ambition. If there was anything that she wanted me to do after graduation, it wasn't going to happen, people. Simply because she wanted me to do it. So, you know what I did? I sat in the testing room at George Washington High School in Philadelphia with my trusty number 2 pencil, and I whipped through that test. I only opened the booklet for show. To be honest with y'all, I made it look like I was prepared. Having that confident conversation before the test. Are you guys ready? Y'all ready? Yeah, man, I'm ready. You ready? It's going to be good, man. Good luck. Good luck, everybody. Good luck. Good. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I know it is. Good job, guys. 20 minutes after that test began, I stood up, handed them my answer sheet. Everybody looked at me like I was crazy. I ain't crazy. I'm the smartest motherfucker in this room. Y'all stupid because y'all don't know about abracadabra. I tried to tell one girl that you knew you want to do abracadabra. She looked at me like I was stupid. You stupid. Over here taking the test all right. I stood up, walked out the room. To the amazement of everybody else, in disbelief that I was finished that fast. In fact, let me go back. I didn't just walk out the room. I strutted. I felt good about it. At Six Flags, I had a good time. I was bragging to my friends about how good I did on the test. They were serious about getting into good colleges, and they'd already taken the SAT, so they were excited for me. When I returned home, my mom asked me, how did it go? I was like, great. That's what I told her. That's good, Kevin. I'm proud of you. It turned out that I nailed it. 790 verbal and 780 math. I was going to Harvard, people. You hear that? 790 on the verbal, motherfuckers. 780 on math. I'm a genius. Actually, I'm bullshitting, people. That's not what happened at all. That's a complete lie. And there's no reason for me to tell that lie, because this book is based on truth. And if you believe that, then you got a gambling problem. You fucking degenerate. My odds of doing well on that test with that stupid system were abysmal. I got something like a 400 on the verbal and a 350 on math. That's not that much better than someone gets for just putting a name on the paper. I believe you actually get 400 for putting your name on the paper. So let's go back. I didn't get a 400 for verbal. I got a 400 for putting my name on the paper, and I didn't score in verbal at all. I didn't get a goddamn point, which is fucking impossible. The fact that I managed to not get a answer right on a verbal is impossible. I even argued that. When they gave me the test back, I got an argument. So you telling me I ain't get shit right on the verbal side? No, sir, you didn't. No, you did not. So where the 400 came from? Your name. Everybody gets 400 to start out with. Holy shit. Now, keep in mind you get 400 just for your name. But on the math side, I got 350. Yes, my mom was disgusted with me. She was mad because she was like, you said you got this, but you didn't even try. She was pissed, scolding me. You know how hard I worked to get you the best life and the best opportunities? And you taking them for granted? Disappointed in you, Kevin. You're better than this. I'm gonna be honest with y'all, my mom's reaction hurt me. It hurt me more than the test results. Because she sacrificed so much for me, and I repaid her with apathy, cockiness, and ingratitude. I mean, there was no way to think or talk or joke myself out of this. Like, it was impossible. I fucked up. As the months passed, I looked around and I saw so many kids my age especially on the swim team. They were celebrating their success. They got in combined scores of 1,500. I mean, goddamn, first of all. They were stoked that their top choices for college, they would be getting, they would basically get these test results, and, I mean, all of their dreams were coming true. What do you mean your colleges are getting these scores? The colleges that we applied to, Kevin. They get the scores directly. Wait, hold on. Slow down. Y'all applied to colleges? Yeah, what are you talking about? Months ago. Why, you didn't apply? You didn't apply anywhere, Kev? I didn't know the deadline already passed. Well, you think I should have done it? Y'all think I should have applied somewhere? Well, I mean, don't worry about it, I guess. I mean, it's kind of late now. What do you mean kind of late? Like, can I still apply? No. I mean, Kev, it don't matter. With your scores, nobody would accept you. As graduation drew closer, my teammates, goddamn, I'll be damned, started getting college acceptance letters. Dude, I just kept feeling lower and lower. Shit was getting worse and worse. Now family members asking me about my plan. What you gonna do after graduation? I couldn't answer that shit. I don't know. My entire plan had just been to be free of my mom. I had no plans beyond that. I hadn't sent out a single college application. Bullshitted my way through the SAT. I never really considered the future. Guess what? Now I didn't have one. See, the lesson that I drew from this at the time was that I should have tried harder. I should have taken school more seriously. I should have had a plan like everyone else. I still feel that way, but there's an additional lesson that I get from it now. See, it's never too late to start caring. My future was out there. It was just waiting for me to find it. And the challenge was not giving up on myself just because it seemed like everyone else was pulling ahead of me and leaving me further and further behind in months that followed. That's the test that each of us face in life. Can you fail and still be strong? Can you not fit in and still accept yourself? Can you lose everything and still keep searching? Can you be in the dark and still believe in the light? Because no matter how low you go and how lost you feel, there's always tomorrow. And tomorrow just may be the day when you get lifted up and you find your way. Now, there's just one thing that tomorrow demands of you to make this happen. Is that you never stop believing in your power to create a better day. This way, when your best possible future comes looking for you, almost always at a time and at a place that you least expected it, you'll be able to recognize its face and respond to its call. Now, I know this to be true, because although I never saw it coming, even when it came, it's exactly what happened to me. Life lessons from work. People with calluses work hard, but some people with soft hands work even harder because they got themselves to a level where they can take care of their hands. That's deep. Think about it. You don't get manicures until, keep what I said in your mind, because where I was about to go would have fucked up what I said. So Kevin. All right, let's get back to the book. Chapter 23, The Greatest Attender of All Time. You never know your level of underachieving until you see what overachieving looks like. See, when you're a teenager, the best place to see this is at graduation, when the same name is announced over and over again. And the valedictorian is Doug Wallace. And the most valuable player is Doug Wallace. And the most likely to succeed is Doug Wallace. Fuck you, Doug. Fuck you, man. God damn it, Doug. Holy shit. Every goddamn thing, Doug. Fuck! Doug. Fucking Doug. Each time, everyone in the audience, especially Mr. and Mrs. Wallace, thinks, God damn, that Doug. Oh, that Doug. Let me tell you something about that Doug. That Doug. Let me tell you something. Doug. Hey, guys. Doug. Let me tell you something. Doug is going to make something of himself. That Doug is going to be something. Let me tell you something. That Doug. Doug ended up eating people's faces. For the record, he took some bath salt and went on a crazy face-eating binge. That's a lie. That's a lie. Doug is actually a surgeon. Yeah, that's what Doug said he was going to do, and he did it. Doug is actually one of the best surgeons in the world. Actually, if I ever needed surgery, I'm going to try to get in contact with Doug. Because I know Doug's going to do a good job. So, good for you, Doug. Good for you, man. This was my experience, people. I remember sitting at our swim team graduation banquet. True story. Though there were other underachievers like myself in school, the kids on the swim team, nah, they were different. These kids were superstars. Some were getting full-ride scholarships and going to places like Spelman College, University of Maryland, even Harvard. Others were planning to train for the Olympics. I mean, look, there were so many overachievers around me, getting up and receiving plaques and trophies and awards to consistent applause. The hard work I'd seen them put in, it was paying off. See, but every dog has his day. And mine came when I finally got my award that night. It was the honor that I deserved. It was for best attendance. See, my mom had been so strict that she never let me miss a day of practice. I think it was called the Participant Award. First of all, they should just call it the pussy. You're a pussy. You got the Participant Pussy Award, Kevin. That's what you got. It wasn't even a trophy. It was a certificate. What the fuck, man? They ain't even put it in a frame. It was just a piece of paper. I could have fucking balled that shit up and put it in my back pocket. Everyone knew. Everybody knew that was the lamest award you could possibly get. Gave me that fucked up clap. You know that clap where somebody got to start it? Where it's not even like a... It's not even a group clap. That's the worst clap. Where one person starts your clap. It don't even go together. They couldn't even clap at the same time. I don't want that sporadic ass clap. Kiss my ass. Take that clap back. I remember when they called out Kevin Hart. It was from the stage. There was like, not only was it the fucked up clap, but there was a path that I had to walk. Okay? I didn't have a good seat at the banquet. Cause nobody expected me to get shit. They sat us in the back. Alright, so I had the longest walk to the stage. And I stepped up to the podium. I placed one hand on the microphone. Every other kid who spoken, they had written their speeches on like pieces of paper or on an index card. Now I was on stage. This is the first time in my life that I've ever been on a stage. I got no paper, no preparation, no clue what to say. First thing out of my mouth was, "Hello, I'm Nancy's son." Great introduction, by the way. I said, though a lot of y'all know me as the butt digger. When I said that, the room burst into laughter. Now, everyone there knew and had probably made fun of the photo that I was telling y'all about. Okay? That photo by the pool. Here's the thing. Until this day, I just wish that the photo would have been taken down a long time ago, but it wasn't. It's what it is. I keep going. The laughter amped me up. So I just keep going with the laughter. I said, I just want to say for the record that tonight, I never cheated. Okay? I know some of y'all think that I probably cheated in practice and stuff like that because I wasn't the best swimmer, but I didn't. Here's how you know that I didn't cheat. How would it be possible for me to go to more swim practices than anybody else here and yet not get a single award for my swimming? People start laughing. People now laughing, clapping. I see some people, they slapping their knees. So I say, I'm going to dig into the award I got. The best participant? That's what y'all gave me? Do you understand what that's like? That's like getting an award for being the team's best Kevin. It's not an accomplishment or a talent. Guys, this is coming off the top of my head. I'm free rolling. I'm going with the flow. It's just something that my mom decided. To be honest with y'all, I said my mom should be getting that award. Not me. Mom, come on up here. I hope this was worth all the whoopings. Because you're about to get your participant award, Mom. Listen, when I tell y'all I felt as if something unlocked in me. Like, I'd known that I was the fun guy who helped people lighten up and made people feel good. But I'd never known that it was possible to do the same thing outside of a conversation and light up a whole room. On some level, my smart assery on stage was also fueled by my disappointment in myself. And I was trying to make the best out of a bad thing, so I just kept going. I started doing an impression of Coach Ellis, and then other coaches, and then the most loved swimmers on the team. Most of all, I made fun of myself. I made fun of myself for being on that team for nearly 10 years and getting the most pathetic award of the night, which I said I knew for a fact they gave me out of pity. I mean, after all, if they really liked me, they wouldn't have cropped me out of all the team photos. Nobody wanted to admit that I was on this fucking team. Nobody. The best and the brightest had free ride scholarships to the best universities. And I went on, and all I had was the damn best participant certificate. That's not even going to get me a job at a Shell station. Okay? I looked at my mom. She was shaking her head in shame. Yet I kept going. I hit him with about a full 15 minutes. I didn't even know it. That was a set. That's a full 15-minute set. I was doing stand-up. This was my first comedy set, and I killed it. Even though I wasn't the star of the team, I was the star of the banquet. Afterwards, people kept coming up to our table. They just kept on saying, great speech. Oh, my God, Nance, that's a funny boy. Oh, you got a real comedian on your hands here. Now, only when I look back on this now does it seem significant. But it was the only comedy show of mine that my mother ever attended. See, it actually was a good speech. That's what my mom told me. She admitted when the ceremony ended. But I didn't feel good. I was walking out of a room full of winners with a goddamn perfect attendance certificate in my hands. That night felt like a farewell to my childhood. After nearly a decade, it was the end of swim team and the end of most of those friendships. I wouldn't be going to practice the next day or competing in the swim meet the next week. It was over. See, I used to resent being forced to spend so much time swimming. But when I was hugging people goodbye that night, I was practically crying. I didn't understand that what I'd done that night could be a career. I just thought I made a funny speech that compensated for the fact that, unlike everyone else there, I was going nowhere in life. Chapter 24, Another Day in the Life of a Hero. Graduating high school was one of the most schizophrenic days of my life. I'm fucking free. I danced through the hallways. Fuck school. Fuck swimming. Fuck everybody. Mom kissed my ass. I ain't doing none of your shit no more. But when I left that building for the last time, reality dawned on me again and I thought, wait a minute, where'd I go? I still don't have a plan. And the SATs, I mean, Kevin, God, boy, you should have tried. Hold on a minute. Y'all going away? Ain't y'all got a plan? Every single one of y'all? I woke up the next day with nothing to do and nowhere to go. All the structure and control that I hated so much, it was gone. I had total freedom, and it was terrifying. It felt like a giant sinkhole had opened beneath me, and I was falling in. Everything had been for free, and I'd taken it all for granted, and I'd blown it off. I spent the next few days lying around the house watching television, hanging out with friends, trying to think of a direction for my life. One afternoon, my mom came home from work and said that we needed to have a talk. Turned out there was a plan, but it was something I'd forgotten. My mom said that she was going to keep her end of the bargain that we made a few years ago. All I remembered about the deal was that when I turned 18, I would be free. But there was another piece to it. I'm not going to pay you to live under my roof and come and go as you please. And do nothing with your life. As she lectured. Like I said, you're going to find a college. Now, with her help, I registered for summer school at a community college in Philadelphia, and I picked my classes. Then I hastily put together a plan. Get my scholastics together, take the SAT again, and go to Temple or another big college to play basketball. It felt like going backwards, but it was a life lesson and a chance to start over. Then after that, my mom delivered the worst news of all. I need to get a job, too. There was only one job that I was qualified for. It was lifeguarding. I went back to visit the swim coaches, and they had a list of, like, community pools in need of lifeguards. So when they handed me the printout, there was only one pool on it, Belfield. Belfield was more like a wet jail cell than a swimming pool. See, it wasn't much of a job since I was only working 2 or 3 days a week, but it was just enough to keep my mom happy. On my first day at work, I saw what looked like half the neighborhood crammed into a tiny pool. It was more people than should reasonably be in a pool, and definitely more than a young, inexperienced lifeguard can control. On my second day, the pool was even more crowded, and I saw a little boy playing in the middle of everyone. He seemed excited, like he was having a good time in the midst of the chaos. As I sat there watching, one of the senior lifeguards jumped in the water, grabbed him, brought him out onto the deck. I jumped off my chair. I ran up to him as the other lifeguards were turning him over. The boy was on his back now. Now he coughing. I stood there stupidly just trying to figure out if he was breathing or if he needed me to give him CPR. Then I realized that if he was coughing, then he must be breathing. He said, "Hart, you didn't see that?" That's the senior lifeguard gonna say to me. "No. No, I did not. I thought he was playing. I had no idea that he was serious." See, people, before you judge, you need to know that it's not always possible to tell the difference between someone who's playing and someone who's panicking. Okay? They're both usually yelling. They're both waving their hands around. They're both splashing around. And if they're surrounded by 50 other kids who are also yelling and waving their hands, it's like Where's Waldo shit. You know what I'm saying? Except it's harder because everyone's wearing swimsuits. The point is that if you're planning to drown, tell somebody first. My other point is, there were 50 motherfuckers standing around that kid. You telling me that nobody else noticed him either? Okay? The real point here is that I got fired. Yeah, that's, I know it's shocking. None of you probably saw that coming. But they let me go. The call the next morning, actually, it went like this. They was like, what did they say? They said, "No need to come into work today. Yeah, we don't think it's safe for you to be here." By that, they meant like safe for me, not the swimmers. Because the people at the pool, they were mad. Yeah, they was gonna fuck me up if I had went back there for almost killing that little boy. I think the word got out that I tried to kill the boy. That's how somehow, I don't know how it actually translated into that, but it turned into Kevin tried to kill Marcus. Yeah. Till this day, I can't go to Belfield. Yeah, I think they still looking for me. Probably the only area in Philadelphia that's not happy for my success. Let's just go ahead and put that on record. Belfield, when you read this, I got nothing but love for you. And I did not try to kill Marcus. So, I'm glad we got that clear. Good news for me is the basketball trials were coming up at community college. And that's what I really cared about. Maybe my plan could make up for my poor academics and I could go from here to the Temple Owls or the 76ers or something. See, that struck me as a good plan. And it'll be easy to shine because the community college didn't have a big team, you know. They probably only played like 3 other schools, to be honest with you. So I showed up at tryouts feeling overqualified. And I didn't make the team. I didn't make the fucking team. I didn't make the small-time community college basketball team. It had never occurred to me that when I stopped growing, you know, during my sophomore year of high school and everyone else kept growing, that my basketball career was no longer on a growth trajectory either. My totally impractical and pretty vague, but only plan for my life went up in smoke that day. Meanwhile, the classes, man, look, they were going horrible. In math, I mean, the teacher handed out a pop quiz. I was in no way, shape, or form prepared for it at all. I thought you just had to study for the regular test. The quiz may have been his way of checking to see how much we already knew, which was stupid because we in fucking community college, so you know we don't know much. What you checking for? We're the goddamn worst of the worst in here. You know that. I probably got the lowest score in class. After I failed that test, didn't make the basketball team, and got fired from my first job, the terror really sank in. See, up to that moment, I just made a mistake. I made a mistake by not trying and not having direction. Now I was putting in the effort and planning for the future, and I still failed. This meant the problem wasn't my thinking. The problem was me. I wasn't good enough. And on top of everything, I've been going through a 5-month dry spell. Chapter 25, Crossing the Desert. Or is it the desert? Wait, does desert have one S or two S? Damn it, Kevin. This is where I struggle. It's not with the tough words. It's with the easy words that become a problem for me. Desert's a tricky word. How you spell dessert? Is dessert in desert? God damn it. And I'm by myself. Fuck. I'll just put both on here. So that way I'm safe. So I know you guys are listening to the book, but for the people that have the book in front of them that are actually reading it, I put both desert with one S and then with two S's. Always protect yourself from a stupid mistake by doing the stupid thing. Life lesson. I applied myself to one thing that I could succeed in that summer. Taking advantage of my mom's more relaxed regimen. My friend Spank, he'd been inviting me to a club called Dances for like the longest time. And finally I was able to go with him. You know, I'd known Spank since high school because he used to play basketball in our neighborhood. He was another friend with a plan, you know. He was attending Temple University, but he stopped by the community college to meet all the time because he thought the community college had a better male to female ratio. Turns out that when I went to community college, the women there, how can I say this without being too disrespectful? At that time, fine women had went on a dumb streak. Does that make sense? Yeah, it was a lot of beautiful women at the community college, which meant that the more attractive, there was a high percentage of fine women at the community college, but a low percentage of the, forget it, it's going to sound bad. I can't. There's no way for me to clean this up. There was some motherfucking fine women that just wasn't doing well in school, okay? That's what I'm saying when I went to community college. Now, before I keep reading, I don't want attractive women marching on me and getting upset. I'm not saying that fine women don't do good in school. I'm saying that at this time, when I was struggling, it was a lot of fine women that were struggling too. So I think there was something in the air that made sexy people struggle. Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. I'm going to stick with that. Okay. So me and Spank, we start going to dances. We start trying to meet girls. If nothing worked out, we end up at like a 24-hour McDonald's nearby. You know, I spent a lot of nights at this McDonald's. They basically made a McDonald's parking lot into a club on Broad Street in Philadelphia. This is a very true story. Like, this McDonald's was open 24 hours, and people would just, they would drive their cars down the street. They would park. People would sit out on their cars. And beautiful women, guys with money, athletes. I mean, literally, it was the place to be after a club was over. And I was on a drought, guys. I was on a drought that felt like it would never end. I mean, no matter who I talked to in the club, she had no interest in me. It's like people could smell that shit wasn't going right in my life. I don't know how women have that talent to just know when you a guy with nothing going on. You can have the nicest shirt and pants on, but something about your life stench. You got a life stench that just doesn't smell right. That guy don't smell successful at all. Mm-mm. Girl, don't go over there. He wearing that unsuccessful cologne. What you wearing? Not doing good in life? What kind of cologne is that? It's one of the worst feelings in the world when you start to believe that the person you see in the mirror every day may not be attractive to anyone except your mama. That's tough. I couldn't afford to buy the designer clothes other guys were wearing. I ain't have a fighting chance, man. The best that I could muster was like a baggy food stained sweater and some baggier jeans with a dirt so deeply embedded in the denim that no detergent was strong enough to remove it. Now Spank, on the other hand, Spank was a big guy with the booming voice, the colossal personality, and he had enough money to buy himself a guest denim jacket and some matching jeans, which was the go-to. If you had on the guest denim set at that time, you were fucking doing great. The triangle back pocket. That was huge, man. That little guess triangle.